Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
Is it close the wall up or fill the wall up?
I believe it is close the wall.
And you may be completely correct there. Anyway, and you welcome to the second hour on this Saturday, February 8th of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Do you ever think about starring? We star? I'm not sure what that means. But at any rate, what we were talking about during the break is crucial information. This is important. What time is it on the moon? I mean, you got to think about that. I mean, if it's tomorrow in Japan, what time is it on the moon?
It is the same time as it is in part of Britain.
Which, okay, so and we finally did some research on this, and we determined it's called Universal Trans. It's UTC or something like that. Anyway, there is
Lunar Standard Time.
Lunar Standard Time?
Yes.
What is Lunar Standard Time? And that actually goes with whatever time thing it is that's universal. What is that?
What's UTC. It called?
Is UTC. Okay. Correct. So it's UTC. In other words, we concluded finally that UTC time applies to the entire universe and to Great Britain.
Of course.
And Mauritania, by the way. Mauritania. The rest of the Earth is out of sync with the universe, and that may be a key issue. In other words,
the rest of the universe and Britain
are lined up
at the
right.
same time.
Exactly.
Yes.
But the rest of the Earth is out of sync with the rest of the universe, except for that little line that runs from Britain down to Mauritania.
Yeah, that could be the reason why we're having the kind of difficulties that we are having in the world.
It could be.
Is that the rest of the universe is on British time while we are not.
Well, no. It's universal. It's no longer British time.
Universal.
It's
yes.
universal.
That which is, I mean, they did call it Great Britain. I mean, great. It used to be,
but it's not called anymore. It's now called the UK, United Kingdom.
Right. Well, it's
well, maybe the kingdom extends further
universal
than
universal and united. I can see where they're coming
but,
there.
But this is the interesting thing. Probably the difficulty we're having here is we here in the United States are 6 hours behind, in central Texas, at least, in the central time zone.
Right.
We are 6 hours behind the rest of the universe.
Well, in parts of Asia,
they're ahead of the universe.
Ahead of the universe. They should know what's going on.
But that could be very confusing to be ahead of the universe, because the universe could then run over you very easily. I would rather be behind the universe than in front of it.
You know, it's silly to hear us talking about it. People are, what are they talking about now? The fact that other people don't find this silly is what I find silly.
I don't know that it's silly, but it's the way we've agreed that things work.
Yes, the moon is on the same time as Britain.
Actually, Greenwich.
United Kingdom, one city in the United Kingdom, we will say the whole moon is on that time zone.
But not just the moon. There's entire galaxies that run on that time.
It's like Monty Python said, all right, what time is it in the Belt of Orion? Well, we'll use Greenwich. That's Greenwich is fine. We'll use that for them, too.
That's a really pleasant town. I mean, there's a nice little observatory there. And that it's just, there's a lot of odd things in the world.
We drew a line in the ground there, so that's a good place. That line is also good for Orion's Belt. Yes.
I like that. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and if you'd like us to discuss things of a more practical and...
It's pretty practical, thinking about what time it is.
On the moon. Yeah, and the funny thing is, we can see the moon at night a lot of times, and sometimes in the daytime from here. Mm-hmm. And it's a different time there than it is here. And for 6 hours, it's a different day. 6 hours each day, it's a different day there than it is here.
So we can look at the moon and say,
we can see the future.
Is in a different day.
Yeah, then we can see the future.
We can see the future.
Yeah, we can see tomorrow for 6 hours.
Every day. Well, unless it's a new moon. And then we're
going
to wait to see the future.
From midnight until 6 a.m., when you're looking at the moon, you're looking at tomorrow.
Yeah. Any time you see the moon, you're looking at the future.
Now, if we could just get the stock market report from the moon.
Now, you can also say anytime you see the moon, you're looking at the past, because it takes a little bit of time for the reflected light on the moon to hit us. So what we're actually seeing is something that happened before, and it happened before in the future.
I think if we had
I think
anybody,
my head just blew up.
If anybody was actually listening, I think they probably hung up or turned our radio off or whatever they do. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone number's in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
There's a lesson to be learned from the Harvard Endowment.
Yes.
And it's sort of came to light when Muhammad El Orion resigned from PIMCO. And that's probably far too geeky for most people. They probably have no idea. Muhammad El Orion was one of the most prolific talking heads and opinion-generating human beings on the planet for quite a while now. As the CEO of PIMCO, which at that time had the largest portfolio of mutual funds and the largest mutual fund on the planet, which was PIMCO Total Return, which we were forced to use on some occasions but mostly stayed away from like the plague. And there's a lot of reasons for that, and they're technical, but they're real. And he suddenly resigned. Suddenly. Just boom, he's gone. And, of course, trying to hunt around to find out a sudden resignation of a CEO of a major company like that generally is not the best of indicators. But there wasn't a lot of noise about it. Bill Gross, the co-chief investment officer and so on, is the sort of face of the company, and he stepped back in. By the way, last year, PIMCO had the largest, it broke another record. They had the largest dollar outflow from any mutual fund in any year in history.
They're still, the total return fund is still the second largest fund.
Right, it is now the second. But the point is that something is going on there. It's interesting to take a look back and see what did Mr. L. Orion do before he was at PIMCO. And he was the Harvard endowment chief portfolio manager. I mean, he was the guy in charge of the Harvard Endowment.
Don't even know why that's a big deal.
Well, the Harvard Endowment was quite famous.
Quite famous in a very small community. In a community of investment managers.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you follow investment stuff, which we tend to do because it's what we do for a living, the Harvard Endowment has been quite famous because it has these phenomenal returns. From the beginning of the 21st century, it has just knocked out the lights with its amazingly huge returns, most of which, by the way, were in what was called and are still called to some degree alternative investments, which is an extremely vague term.
Yes.
And the majority of the Harvard Endowment in these investments, in these alternative investments, was invested in illiquid invested assets. Now, that's a nice way of saying that you can't sell it. You can't get money back out of it. One of the things that did the best in the Harvard Endowment, to give you an example, is timberland. In other words, they bought up literally millions of acres of forest where the income and value is generated by cutting down trees and selling them to lumber mills and paper mills and things of that nature. Why didn't they dip when the market dipped? Well, the answer we now realize is that
they didn't have to, because
they weren't on a market where they can dip. And if you've noticed, like, your house appraisal from the appraisal district during the during the collapse of the housing market, when the appraisal district came out and said how much your house is worth, you didn't see a collapse in the value of the real estate.
Hey, wait a minute. No, a year later or so, you started to see
a small dip.
And then it goes down a little bit more. Well, what happened, Harvard Endowment, this is a big one, a big chunk of what they owned was forestry land in the mountains, which was not on the market because people aren't buying and selling forestry land at big chunks. So I'm using this as an example, as one of the alternative investments.
A lot of it was in East Texas, too, right. Which is not exactly mountainous. But.
Right. And so they have all of this land that they marked at the value that they purchased it. Plus, they had revenue from the sale of timber.
During the housing boom.
Right. Well, the housing boom stopped. So the revenue dropped for the sale of the timber. They had to figure out something to do with that. And eventually, people started saying, well, what's the real value of that land? What is the value of the property there? And it was about a tenth of what the value that the Harvard Endowment was saying it was.
And the end result was that Harvard hit a rough spot there for a while.
Had to sell a bunch of art that right. was given to it in endowment form by all these people that thought it was going to be put on display for the world to see. And a bunch of private owners are now in possession of great artworks that were donated by and bequeathed by estates going years and years in the past to be seen by all.
The point I want to make here is the Harvard Endowment looked like it was doing very, very well because it was in an illiquid position that doesn't have an auction market. It's not reported in the market. And we're going to go to another whole story here, and Jake's knows where I'm going here. But I want you to listen to the story as we go. What's happened to the Harvard Endowment? Well, among other things, Muhammad El Orion left suddenly from the endowment. And the reason he left suddenly from the endowment is somebody looked at his compensation and realized that he, just this one person, was making more money than all of the professors, all of the educators at Harvard combined did not make as much money as the guy who was managing their portfolio. And I don't know why they thought that was odd.
I don't know. I mean, it's an educational institution. Why did they think they were going to make a lot of money as educators? What were they thinking? They hired a portfolio manager.
Well, you know, from my perspective, they should have gone to UT and looked what the coach earns.
Right. Yeah. If you look at it as a revenue builder. And
it was.
Yeah.
But the problem was, of course, he got out of there just before they realized that you can't sell a little bit of timberland and generate money to pay people.
You have to sell a lot of it, and you have to find a buyer that's willing to buy a lot of it at a time when there's not a housing boom to support the sale of timber.
So the endowment dropped about as much as the rest of the stock market.
We're going to throw another thing on there. Bugs.
Well, that was part of it, too.
Bugs came through and wiped out the timber population.
But, you know, I mean, Bugs Bunny is a problem.
What's up, Doc?
And anyway, I'm just trying to bring you into something here. First off, there was perceived value and security in a fixed illiquid investment that everybody considered to be a sure thing. Okay? And the folks at the Harvard Endowment insisted. And Muhammad El Orion said that our deal here is we buy so much of this that you don't have to worry about it because we get this huge discount because we're buying millions of acres at a pop. Now, and these alternative investments are really cool. And frankly, he was given great praise. That's why he wound up being the CEO of PIMCO. PIMCO. He was given great praise.
He's asked to speak all over the world.
And he speaks and everybody listens. He gets paid $100,000 a pop to make speeches. The whole issue is here that he bought something that isn't reported daily on the market because there's no auction. There is no open auction market on the New York Stock Exchange or anywhere else for millions of acres of timberland. It's just not there. So guess who ultimately
they get to say what the price is.
Right. The person who manages the portfolio or the accountants that work for that person get to tell you what the price is. Now, this sounds a little bit like Madoff.
Yeah, and what's more, that the manager gets paid based on the performance of the portfolio.
Right.
And if a big chunk of the portfolio performs whatever way he decides to write it down or the accountants decide to write it down, he's going to choose the things that are the hardest to make drop in value on a daily basis.
Here's the point. If you look at your portfolio and you look at the 5-year return of your portfolio as of the end of the fourth quarter last year, You can measure yourself against the famous Harvard endowment, if you'd like. And you can see just how well you've done versus them. The average annual return over the last 5 years for the Harvard endowment was 1.7% per year, which is about the inflation rate. In other words, the Harvard endowment, even though it gets to determine what the value is of big chunks of its own portfolio, is up 1.7% on average for the last 5 years. The new manager, who's Jane Mendillo, has been trying to fix it, and actually in the last 4 years since she's been there, the average annual rate of return is about 10.6% a year, which is really quite well. But the big issue that she had to do, and the reason that longer-term average stinks at this point, is she was forced to sell off illiquid assets. And we used that term earlier. It's a big, important thing to realize that when you have illiquid assets, selling them off can be very expensive. It can be very difficult. But she had to increase the liquidity so that the university could actually get some money out of their supposedly very valuable portfolio. She sold a lot of that at a discount to what they paid for it, which is why that very low return for the five-year period is in there. Now, how does that relate to you? And we're going to hopefully spend probably the rest of the hour discussing that. There's negatives and positives. I want to hit a positive first, and I want to turn it over to Jake, who's got a big negative he wants to talk about, one of my favorite negatives. I have a favorite negative? I want to think about that.
It's kind of an oxymoron, isn't it?
The last 4 years, the Harvard endowment has done relatively well, about 10% a year, which is a good return for a well-balanced portfolio. Again, take a look at your own portfolio. If you got about 10% a year over the last 4 years, you're probably doing well. Now, did the stock market do better than that? Yes. But you want a balanced portfolio. You don't want all the ups and downs of the market. Then having a four-year average return of about 10% is good. Now, what's in there? She has a big chunk of emerging market stocks in there. That's the thing that's got everybody scared and running for the woods right now. And I would almost be willing to bet, if I were a betting person, that she's buying more of them right now because...
We are.
Because it just makes sense. And the reason we say that is the United States economy is recovering. People are being hired. That means they're going to buy more stuff. Look where the stuff is made. End of argument. Now, the other side of that, the negative side of that, is very appealing. And there's an old saying, learn from the mistakes of others because you can't live long enough to make them all yourself. There is a The reason Muhammad El Orion pulled the plug in a couple of different directions, probably, I won't say this because I don't know, I won't say it's a certainty, is because somebody basically realized that what he had purchased over the long term carried huge risk, and the risk is coming home to roost.
Yeah, it's going to be in the stories, not necessarily the headlines, because the only people that were really affected on this was this big institution that mm-hmm. nobody really cares whether...
And I'm going to turn it over to Jake here to explain something, because we are seeing a lot of indications that members of the public are being led to make the same error that Muhammad El Orion made, because people are selling something to them that looks safe, but is in fact inherently very dangerous.
The subject is annuities. Now, not all annuities. There are places in a portfolio, in some portfolios, for annuities. Don't think that this is a diatribe against the whole sector of the world. But I'm getting a lot of people... Two people in the last week talked to me about these annuities that are linked to an index, that are linked to the stock market, and they have this participation rate, and if the stock market goes up, then they get all that gain, and if the stock market goes down, they don't lose anything. Their guaranteed income number stays the same. There's some problems here. That guarantee word The guarantee is only as good as the company that gives it. Let me say that very clearly. And if you're comfortable taking all of your investment portfolio and investing it in one company, one stock, if you will, only without the ability to vote on the shares, just the stock, you take all the risks of that, that's what you're doing when you buy an annuity. So people have these credit ratings on insurance companies, but the best way to look at the stability of an insurance company is go look at its stock value. Look what it's done over the past 10 years. Even the best insurance companies had a major downturn in 2007, 2008. We're talking about 80% drops. And if you're willing to put your entire fortune in companies across the board, even the best ones had massive drops during that time period, that's the guarantee that you're buying. Because if the stock price drops based on the revenue and they have to declare bankruptcy, you've got to get in line with the rest of the creditors. Really what you're doing is buying bonds based on the promise of these companies. And now, the things that sell these annuities is you put the money in and they say, I'm going to put some extra money in your account when you put this in. We're going to use some common sense here. If I put in $100,000 and the insurance company says, we're going to do a bonus, we're going to put 10% of what you put in the first year, we're going to put that in. Some of them do 15%, some of them do 17%, some do 20%. So you say, all right, I put $100,000 in and it's matched $10,000. That's great. I have $110,000 in my account. You know what goes on if you try to liquidate that? If you say, all right, I want that money out. I've got a 10% gain already. I need to spend some of that money or all of that money. Well, your surrender value is $90,000. Wait a minute. Let's stop a moment. Look, think about that. You put $100,000 in. The insurance company matches you with $10,000. So you've got $110,000, but you really only have $90,000. So what's the real number? The real number should be how much money can you access? And that is really, really hard. And we were just talking about Timberland. How much money can the Harvard Endowment access from that investment? Well, they can't. It's an illiquid investment. They cannot sell it for any type of price that they would be willing to sell it for.
I'm going to use a specific company here, and I'm not talking about this company in particular because it actually did better than most insurance companies that issue annuities. But I've actually beat up on several companies in the past. I beat up on Hartford, which went from a very healthy company with a high stock price down to almost bankruptcy and single digits. And I beat up on Aegon. But I'm just going to pull one that actually did a little better, and that's Allianz.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give you an example of the risk if you purchased an annuity from Allianz. And the risk is simply summed up in the fact that in the year 2000, towards the end of the year, Allianz stock was trading at $400+ per share. Okay? Just simply okay. Recognize that.
Mm-hmm.
At the bottom of the market in 2009, it traded for about $66 a share. Now, I want you to think about 400 to 66. What percentage of drop is that? Now, I can tell you, obviously, from 400 to 40 would be a 90% drop. So it's very easy to say that this stock, Allianz, the company itself, the future that investors in the market thought this company had, between the year 2000 and 2009, dropped as much as the United States stock market did in 1929 to 1934.
All right. So I will talk about the parent company.
Well, that is the parent company.
Allianz, the ADR, which is the American Depository Receipt.
Let me add one thing here.
Mm-hmm. Because that's not the parent company that you were talking about.
But this is the Allianz DE, the ADR. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Which is the parent company of the insurance company. It's currently trading about 123. Now, again, in 2000, are we looking at the same thing here?
You're looking at Allianz with a C, which is it's a subsidiary of Allianz with a Z, S-E.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at ALV.DE. Are we looking at the same thing?
We're looking at different things, but we're amounting to the same thing.
Same massive, percentage changes.
Massive
okay.
drops. Yeah.
The point I want to make, this, by the way, is theoretically the parent company of the insurance company. And the point I wanted to make here, would you consider that to be a safe long-term investment? Would you want to put money in a stock that in 2000 was at $400, dropped to 66, has currently made it back to 123? Now, the whole United States stock market has recovered. And we're really happy the Dow Jones Industrial Average, even after inflation, is now higher than it was in 2000. Obviously, the major insurance companies aren't. Now, this is a pretty healthy company. This is a highly rated company. But the issue is that you really need to think about the fact that the company that is guaranteeing an annuity that you buy from Allianz, final backer of that, dropped in value about 85% from 2000 to the bottom, which is about the same level the entire United States stock market dropped in the Great Depression.
Yeah.
And has come back to a level of roughly a third of the value it had 14 years ago. Now, what is that? The stock market, in essence, is saying something about this company. Now, whether the stock market is right, I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know that, but I can tell you that they consider the future of this company the long-term future of this company to be about a third as good as it was 14 years ago.
Yeah.
Now, would you put a 25, 30% or all of your portfolio into a company that will guarantee you, say you have zero risk, show you no downside volatility, but the underlying guarantor had that performance in it, the value of its company on the market? Would it be wise to invest in that company and have them guarantee money for the rest of your life?
Well, this is one of the problems that we run into is people hear the word insurance and they think safe. What you want is insurance with a lot of co-insurance. You want a lot of companies together on an insurance product. You don't want one company's guarantee on the insurance product. And looking into that is far more important than looking at the credit rating of one company. You want to see what's backing that company. You want to make sure that there's lots of money available to pay. What are the reserves? And these are things that are not often talked about by insurance agents. Secondly, probably more importantly, you're going to find that it's very difficult to find anyone in the securities world, the stockbroker, a salesperson of securities, willing to sell you an equity-linked indexed annuity, because the Securities and Exchange Commission really does not like it. The Securities Exchange Commission hates these things. They think that they are a form of manipulation of the investor. Insurance providers, as long as they're not part of the securities industry, just insurance, they look at it as just another kind of an annuity. Be aware of that. I'm not saying that the regulators have all of the answers. In fact, they generally don't have all of the answers. But you know, if they're talking about something being a problem, then at least it is a problem. They have problems in that they can't find the problems sometimes. But when they do find problems, you should listen and say, all right, that is an issue. I am disconcerted by the number of people, educated people, that hear from an insurance agent the word guarantee and throw out their long-term thinking concepts, their long-term reasoning to say, oh, it's guaranteed. Look, it's got A's in the credit worthiness. That's great. Please be aware that when you buy into an insurance product, you're buying into the company the insurance company. You're actually not buying ownership. You're loaning them money. And in the terms of an annuity, you're generally, at some point, going to give them the money, and they're going to give you a stream of income. If their returns on their internal portfolios are not as well earning as they expect, and they go out of business, then the guarantees go with them. And we're saying Allianz a lot, and part of that is because we're combining the story where we're talking about Harvard endowment. Allianz, most of its management, internal management, is done by PIMCO. So that says something there. We're combining a series of things into a long story, and I wanted to use that as the last wrap-up. No matter how good an insurance product, you have to make sure that there's a lot of other companies involved in taking care of that insurance product. That's a form of diversification. You will never hear us say, go out and buy individual stock, one, and put a big chunk of your portfolio in it. In fact, we say the opposite. And we're going to say the same thing about insurance products. Unless you have protections that allow it to be diversified, the money involved there to be truly diversified and not at risk when if the company were to fail, then we highly recommend against using them. And we've got to play some commercials.
We do. We do need to play some commercials. And there's, and again, we're not beating up on that company. Actually, Allianz,
it's a pretty good insurance provider.
Allianz down to about a third of its value in 2000 is far better than, for example, I haven't looked at the stock price on Aegon. Normally it's a single digit. Was it like $72 a share in 2000? And the last time I looked, it was about $7 a share, which
I can tell you, it's right on my screen,
it's
right?
Still
now.
Down about 90%.
It's $8.90.
Okay. $8.90. It was $72 a share in 2000. So across the board, major insurance companies that issue annuities have taken a stock market hit, a valuation hit in the market that is absolutely huge. And one last thing I want to do before we do commercials. You have to understand this, and this is so critical. This insurance company invests your money that you give them, turns a profit, takes some for themselves, and then pays a sum of it back to you in an annuity. They just don't let you, since you can't sell the annuity on the open market, if you
not
have a fixed annuity,
without it,
well, not just a surrender charge. You can actually sell it to somebody else, but the point is you will take a huge haircut in doing so, and this is the problem. If you owned an Allianz annuity in 2000 and you tried to sell it today, you'd get a heck of a lot less for it than you would in 2000 because the company's stock has dropped so much.
People the professionals looking at it, buying that up, are going to say, well, there's more risk here than we thought. Mm-hmm.
So to summarize this, what happened is Mohammed El Orion was managing the Harvard endowment portfolio. And it sort of blew up on them. They brought somebody in to fix it, but they didn't need to liquidate a lot of it or they would have been in trouble. They were basically liquidating the assets of Harvard to try to pay people because their portfolio wouldn't pay them. Now, that's the position they got in because he invested in illiquid assets. And now he, up till very recently, was one of the principal managers of a portfolio that insurance salesmen are trying to sell to the public very, very hard. These indexed annuities, which I could go on about them, about how bad they are all day from an internal point of view. But from an investment point of view, it is an illiquid investment that is a black hole into which you put your money. And this is the most important thing I want to tell you. When you buy a fixed annuity or an indexed annuity, this is not true of a variable annuity, your money becomes the property of the insurance company, and if it fails, you are...
It is actually like loaning them the money.
Right. You are an unsecured creditor, and it is the only... the life insurance business, the life insurance industry, is the only major financial industry in the United States that's not backed by some kind of a guarantee or insurance by an agency chartered by the federal government. It's the only one. And the reason they have fought having any form of the equivalent of the SIPC for securities and the FDIC for banks and the FSLIC and all these corporations that back large financial institutions is because they have to pay for it. They'd have to pay insurance premiums, which would cut into their profits. Banks fought that hard before the 1930s.
Yeah, the Great Depression said any banks that were left actually wanted to pay for FDIC insurance.
They wanted it then, but it was too late for most of the people who had invested in them. By the way, we are the Personal Wealth Coach, and we have to do some commercials, so we'll be back on the other side after these important words from KTEM and Town Square's sponsors. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we've got about 12 minutes left in the show. And we have a caller on 773-1400. So, caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hi, Jeff, Jake. Really enjoy your program. Listen every week as I can. But I got tuned in late today and heard the latter part of the last segment concerning Allianz.
Right.
I'm going to listen to your podcast tomorrow if it's up yet, so I'll catch the first part. You don't need to reiterate.
Should go up on Monday.
Just had. But I've got a retirement specialist that's in the process of putting me in Allianz at the moment.
Well,
are you recommending that I not do that?
Let me talk to this real quick. When people claim to be a retirement specialist, I'm about to make a lot of people upset, but I'm going to say it anyway. Look at their credentials, please. A retirement specialist has no designation around it. If they're saying something, this is a common thing that's said, well, you've got your accumulation manager and you've got your retirement specialist. And during your accumulation period, you let other people handle that. In retirement, that's my specialty. What they're really saying is they're not a fiduciary, because only fiduciaries are allowed to work with 401ks and 403bs and those big retirement arm things and give you advice on it.
This company or organization out of Austin is a fiduciary.
How do you know?
Well, they said so. It's REIT Financial. Makes any difference.
Okay, well, let me say that if somebody is trying to get you into an Allianz annuity, Allianz annuities pay commissions. Fiduciaries don't receive commissions. It's as if you were to go to a doctor and the doctor gets a commission for every medication they prescribe for you, or they were to get a commission on every procedure they recommended a specialist do for you, only don't recommend it. That would make the doctor into a salesman. And fixed annuities, and obviously there's people going to disagree on this. I'm at the master's level in this stuff, okay? Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that when you put money into a fixed annuity or an indexed annuity, they're both fixed annuities because the indexed annuity industry fought hard to keep the SEC from even coming close to regulating them. You are giving your money to a single company. And if you intend your retirement to last for 30 years, you are trusting that that company will be there and will pay you back for 30 years. And it's like buying a bond from that company, except that with a bond, you can go to the auction, the bond auction market in New York. You can go to a broker. You can sell your bond, but you can't. There is no readily available market to sell that annuity. Yes, you can go to the company, but once you annuitize, you cannot sell it back to the company. You are locked into a single company, and I just said Allianz went from $400 to $66 a share.
Now, let me come at this completely different statement. You said something there. You said they're a fiduciary. One of the ways you can tell a fiduciary is they will say the word fiduciary. Not only that.
I specifically asked them that, and they said yes.
Here's a big clue. Have they told you how they make money?
Yes.
Okay, so on this annuity, will they be paid a commission?
Yes, and they said from the company, not...
That's illegal.
See, that's a lie. Whoever said that to you is not acting as a fiduciary and is, in fact, and I hate to break this to you, he's either incompetent and doesn't realize that what he's saying is untrue, or he's competent
and lying
and knew he was telling you something that is untrue. You are paying
that, let me
the company. The company then turns around and takes your money and gives it back to him. The company doesn't pay him separately.
A fiduciary must fully disclose.
Okay.
A fiduciary must fully disclose all compensation, not disclose to you how much you're paying, how much he's getting paid for the transaction. That is the legal definition.
Mm-hmm. Has he done that?
If they're not saying this is how much in either percentages or dollars, saying this is how much I'm getting paid for this transaction, it's kind of like when you buy a car. The car salesman's getting a commission. You're not paying him the commission. The dealership's paying him the commission. You're paying him the commission. We know that. A fiduciary is required to work in your best interest, and there would be some severe penalties for anybody registered as a fiduciary selling strictly annuities. There are very severe penalties.
These people claim to be.
Are they?
If they're getting you into an annuity, do you have a time frame? I think I've heard or read that it's 30 days to back out of the annuity.
You do.
Is that correct?
That's right.
Correct.
And
it's called a free look period.
Annuities are supposed to be insured by the state of Texas up to $250,000.
No,
that's not. I mean,
there is. Texas has a state insurance guarantee fund.
Right.
However, let me give you an example. Let's say you bought an annuity with something life of New York. I can't remember. Executive Life of New York, which was a very well thought of company 20 years ago. And you were in Texas at the time. And you moved someplace else, and then you moved someplace else. And then early last year, when Executive Life of New York was finally declared insolvent, by the way, they were seized by the insurance commissioner 20 years ago. It took them 20 years to resolve the issue. And at this point, you would get about 30 cents back on the dollar as they liquidate the company. You're expected to get about 30 cents back on the dollar. Would Texas, then, the Texas Insurance Guarantee Fund, cover that difference? And the answer is absolutely not. You no longer live in Texas. And
you're living in Texas now, and it's a Texas is Allianz?
It's a German company, so it's definitely not in Texas. Allianz USA is a wholly owned subsidiary of a German company.
Okay. I'm at
and by the way,
TXLifeGA.org, which is the Texas Life it's the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association. The association, this is directly from their webpage. The association provides estimates of Texas only insolvencies. They provide coverage for insolvent member insurance companies licensed only in Texas. Allianz is licensed across the world.
And it may be, under some circumstances, if the domiciled state in the United States into which Allianz USA is domiciled.
It sounds like we're talking bad about Allianz by themselves.
No, I'm just saying this is true of any company. If there is an agreement between the state of Texas and the state in which Allianz is domiciled in the United States, at the time you purchase the insurance policy, and that agreement is still in effect when the insurance policy is finally declared, when the insurance company was finally liquidated, which may be at any point years from now, then you may be covered by the Texas Guarantee Fund. Now, this is a very important point. There is no insurance there. It's forbidden by the state of Texas by law to call that insurance. An agent cannot refer to that as insurance. It's a guarantee fund.
There's
by the way, this is
guidelines that say you're not even allowed to bring it up as a form of
and this
marketing.
This is exactly the same form of guarantee that existed for banks prior to the 1930s. State guarantee funds had covered deposits in banks. Now, if you are familiar with what happened in the 1930s with banks, you realize that the state guarantee funds ran out of money quickly. They're not backed by the legislature or the taxing authority of the state. Rather, they are backed by the insurance companies that do business in the state. And very frankly, it's never been tested. And I strongly suspect that if we got the kind of downturn that would cause a major insurance, like the one we had in 2008 and 9, again. By the way, the reason the insurance companies, the major insurance companies, did not go out of business in 2009 is because this is really goofy, the Federal Reserve stepped in and loaned money to the European Central Bank so that the European Central Bank loaned money to the nations, Germany specifically, in this case, which then turned around and guaranteed the loans of the various major insurance companies, which is why the stock price dropped from 400 to 66. Now,
there's even more complex.
Yeah. All those things that they did, by the way, are now illegal.
There is something very clear here. If someone claims to be a fiduciary, they should put it in writing. They should tell you how they're being compensated and where. They should explain all of their conflicts of interest.
And
if
by the
they
way,
haven't done that, then they're not a fiduciary.
That's called a form ADV. Did you receive one of those?
No.
Then this person is not a fiduciary. That's a simple statement. And whoever it is, I'll be glad to talk to him directly, and I'll be glad to report him to the State Securities Commission while I'm at it.
I'll take care of it myself.
Okay.
Do appreciate the information. It has given me something to check
If you would like some
podcast again to catch the first part of your last segment, and I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
And if you would like some more educational type stuff, give us a call during the normal work week. And I'll send you to the sites that we're talking about, the things that you can do to research if we're talking about a fiduciary. We're out of time for the program. If you would like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting locally at
947-1111.
We also have toll-free number 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can reach us by email at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, from which there will be podcasts, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. And now I've said all of our contact information. We've got plenty of time left.
Well, actually, I want to point out something. Insurance companies are no better or worse than any other company. I want to say that. The problem is when they step forward and say that that your money is safe and guaranteed and don't disclose that it's only as safe as the company is, and companies don't tend to last forever. There's a lot of insurance companies that existed 30 years ago that don't exist today, and the people lost their money.
Balance, your Fox News radio station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.